Backseat Producers, episode number 314, American Hustle.
Spider-Man comes out the beginning of May because that's the Free Comic Book Day weekend release.
Uh-huh. Gonna be there.
Did you know that?
Uh-huh. I did not know that.
Yes. So for the last, I think, 5 years now.
Oh, longer than that. It's been almost 10 because I remember.
Well, I know. Comic books. Well, Free Comic Book Day has been going for about 10 years. Mm-hmm. But the Free Comic Book Day timed with a movie release,
okay,
yeah, has been going for
at least. Okay, yeah, about they finally wised up and tried to synchronize with a bunch of other
there
stuff.
There is. So just about every year for the last 5-ish years, maybe longer than that. I don't know. I'm talking off the top of my head because research.
Just to let you know, the audience, Free Comic Book Day is coming up. Please patronize your local comic store. Pick up a few new issues and pick up a few non-free books there too. You might like what you see. There's a lot of good stuff out there now.
Free Comic Book Day is one of the high holy weekends in this mm-hmm. house. It's a high holy day.
Yeah. I mean, you can pick, find out a whole bunch of new stuff there.
Well, yeah, I mean, because it's like, all right, so we go to the comic book store in the morning, get free comic books, then get to see a brand new comic book movie mm-hmm. that afternoon.
Make a day of it.
Yeah.
Go out for ice cream.
Yeah.
And make it a perfect day.
You can make a fantastic day out of it.
Free comic books, a great movie, and ice cream. What more could you ask for?
You know what? It's a good family day because the comic book stores have all, and the comic book companies have also wised up in the free comic books. A lot of times they'll have comic books that are appropriate for.
Oh yeah, they put out a whole spectrum of them.
And Julie doesn't read comic books, and normally there's something there with Walking Dead in it, so she even will read a comic book.
She'll pick that up
because she doesn't read. She does not read comic books.
Yeah,
she's every trade that we can get from our library. She's read them all, mm-hmm. which is up through like the last one released.
Right.
So yeah, we're current up to, I think the last issue we read was the one right before All Out War, which is just wrapping up. So mm-hmm. the last 10 or 12 issues. But I can't see how anybody reads that in floppy, just because reading it in trade, and the way they release it in trade is they take out all the breaks. So you don't get the splash page, like the interior cover page where it tells you what's going on and
the recap
and any of that. It reads like a fluid story.
Right.
I mean, sometimes you can tell where the break was because it might get a little cliffhanger-y and then it just resolves the cliffhanger from like this page to that. But for the most part, there's not even, you can't even tell.
They put extra stuff in there.
Well, that's why it's called a graphic novel at that point.
They don't?
No.
Okay.
Not in the soft trades.
Yeah.
In the hardcover trades, they put some extra stuff. But the softcover trades, they don't.
A lot of the softcover trades I've seen for various graphic novels I've got, they usually have the back page, they put all the covers.
Yeah. You'll see all the covers. But they don't, I've seen some of them where you'll actually read the book. And then you'll get, you know, you'll see on the page mm-hmm. next issue mm-hmm. such and such, and then you'll open to the next page and it's showing the full splash page with mm-hmm. who all the artist information is and mm-hmm. what the title of that comic is, that individual comic is. But the way they edit together the soft cover trade, they don't do any of that. So it just reads like a book. Mm-hmm. Yeah.
Well, that's the idea.
All six issues crammed together is a book. It's not, I mean, it's a really quick read. I'd be really disappointed paying $3 a copy for those as they came out when I can get them for free from the library.
Just, yeah,
a year later. I mean,
a year later, but hey, you know, you could, it's a better read by then.
It's also an indie book that mm-hmm. as long as you just, I mean, you just don't put certain search terms in and the internet's not too bad about not spoiling it. So
mm-hmm. not too bad.
Plus, I don't scour the comic book news sources the way I would at one point. Spoiler, I'm a big nerd.
Oh, jeez, I would have never noticed.
I have 20 long boxes in my basement.
My God, you are the nerdiest.
And I stopped collecting in 98 or 99. Mm-hmm. That's when I stopped hardcore collecting. So all of those comics were, like, 95% of those were purchased from, like, 1985. We'll say it's, like, 1985 mm-hmm. through 1999.
So then do you have plans for them?
Well, at one point...
Probably 2030.
At one point, my plan for them was to, when I hit about 2010, mm-hmm. to sell them all and pay off my house.
Yeah.
Because at the time, at the rate of growth that the comic book market was going in, like, 1990, 91.
Sure.
The value of my comics at that point was at around... between $40,000 and $60,000, my collection. It only grew after that, and after like 92, the value only decreased.
Yeah,
crash. Yeah, that was
the bubble burst.
The collector bubble burst for comics, yep. And everybody's back down to reality.
It crashed hard.
Same thing happened with the mound of toys that we have in our basement.
Mm.
We have a mountain of toys in our basement, which. Now that we have them, it's sort of like, well, what are we going to do with these now? Well, we can't really sell. Well, I mean, we could sell them, or we could just keep them. Surely somebody will want them someday.
Mm. Holden, stop it, please.
Nevertheless, if you're not in a hurry, they will appreciate again. Time and wear will make them valuable again, at some point.
Some of them.
Yeah, some of them. Problem is, a lot of this stuff is already designed for a collector's market, and they constantly overproduce.
Right.
Well, a big part of the problem is, when I was collecting, to be able to get the stories,
mm-hmm.
the only way you could do it, in a lot of cases, was paying
mm-hmm.
$5 to $10 for a copy of an old comic book.
Right.
When the comics were, you know, 75 cents, $1, $1.25 each. And that was the new cover price.
Mm-hmm.
The problem now is that it's $3 a cover. And if you want a copy of a comic book that from 1985, where my problem was if I wanted a comic book that was 20 or 30 years old, I had to pay $10, $15, $20 for it. Now you go on to Comixology and you pay $2 or $3 for it, mm-hmm. unless it's Comixology sale day, in which case you pay 99 cents, or they collect a trade and you pay like $4 for 6 or 8 issues.
Yeah.
So now there's no value in holding on to the paper.
Right.
For people who just want to read the story.
Right.
Right.
Only things left is essentially the nostalgia value of actually wanting to own it.
Yes, exactly. Own a physical copy of it. But
which can gain over time, but it right.
Yeah.
Nobody's going to just get it just to read it anymore.
That said, when we had our basement caught water a week or two ago, I pulled out a box that has Legos in it because I meant to pull it out and bring it upstairs for Holden, but he's got enough crap to put away in his room right now, so I didn't pull that out yet. But in that box, because at one point I meant to do that before, and I found my first printing copy of Watchmen, the trade, when they collected all 12 issues.
Sure.
And I got it first printing because I bought it new. I mean, I was collecting when Watchmen came out.
Yeah.
But I didn't get the issues because it's like I didn't notice it. I wasn't aware of it until it was like 8 issues in.
Yeah.
And I got a couple of them, but it was really hard to find. And I just never bothered to collect all the individual issues when the trade came out. I was like, oh, I should pick up the collected version. And it was first printing because, you know, it was just when it came out.
Right.
And now it's like, wow, I've got first edition Watchmen. So,
not bad.
But yeah.
Yeah. Well, the comics world has changed an enormous amount. I mean,
and now Comixology was just bought by Amazon.
And it's been seen on Wired News. It's not the end of the world, people.
No, no, no. It's not the end of the world.
It was just a logical acquisition by Amazon.
Wait, sure. Why would that be the end of? I don't understand.
The problem is, well, there's a lot of nerds who see
what there are a lot of nerds.
There are a lot of nerds.
What?
Yes.
Who see certain companies as being the man, as it were. And
the great octopus with multiple arms that just swallows up all so the little guys.
Depending on which nerd you are, those demands are Microsoft, Google, Apple, Amazon, Walmart, you know, corporations.
Corporate yeah. America in general.
Well, I see the
Time yeah. Warner Cable.
I see the irony of yeah. of companies run by nerds being considered the man. But
which is funny, but it's also
it's true.
It's the way of things.
It's true enough.
You get to a point where it's like, all right, you need to satisfy shareholders.
Yeah.
So acquisitions happen. Thing is, Amazon's been pretty good about being fairly hands off with things like when they acquired Audible, mm-hmm. when they acquired Woot.
Yeah.
You know, they've acquired some of these companies that, you know, unless you really look under the hood, you really don't know that
they're wholly owned subsidiaries. That's all they are.
They are. The biggest difference is occasionally, and for like 6 months after Amazon acquired Woot, you wouldn't see any more iPads. You only saw Kindles.
Yeah.
You wouldn't see any more Nooks. You only saw Kindles. You saw yeah. a lot more Kindles on Woot. And occasionally they'll have brought some item that's brought to you by our friends at Amazon.
Mm, yeah.
You know, something like that. Aside from that, the biggest difference I see is when I look at Amazon's site, I occasionally see more advertising for Woot and Audible and things like that. So my question is, and what my hope is once I sat back and thought about it, was, man, wouldn't it be great if Amazon came up with some kind of, because they've already got the infrastructure and the licensing down for their lending library for Kindle. If they could get a lending library for
the Comixology.
For the Comixology. Mm-hmm. Man, that would be awesome. Yeah. And if they do it because you're a Prime member, I'm already a Prime member.
Yeah.
I'd be golden.
Done.
That'd be sweet.
I would be.
Again, like I say, believe it or not, people, I mean, these companies sometimes really do know what they're doing.
Yeah, yeah.
It's not that they have a big pot of money and just want to throw it around and just acquire stuff willy-nilly. Right. It has to fit their business model to begin with. I mean, Amazon sells books. Well, gee, comics are books.
Yeah.
So
yeah.
Why don't we sell them?
Well, and they have Audible.
Mm-hmm.
I mean, what I would love to see from Amazon in the next couple of years is an Amazon Prime membership that costs me like $200 a year that gives me all the services of their lending library from Kindle, mm-hmm. their streaming video that they already give.
Right.
And they already do both of those, but then add to that the full Audible service where they give you a free book a month, which is Audible's thing, and you're paying about, I think, like 10 bucks a month for that. I don't even know. But I think it's in that range. And also give me a lending library for Comixology.
You got it covered.
$200. That's kind of a no-brainer. I would totally pay that.
$250, throw in a Zan from Woot.
And if you throw in grocery online grocery delivery, you never have to leave the house.
Yeah. Throw in a bag of crap from Woot that you could never get.
Yeah, mm-hmm. That's true.
A surprise.
I did get it.
A surprise box every month.
Yeah.
Of just random stuff they thought was interesting.
And not even once a month. I take that once a year.
Mm-hmm.
I did get Christmas a Zune from Woot, though.
A Zune?
Yeah.
Nice.
I loved that thing. I loved that thing so hard.
The Zune was a good device,
I loved
man.
It. You could throw it so hard, and it just would not die. You could not kill that thing.
But until you killed it?
Yes, that's true. I mean, it did.
That truck ran forever. Those things run forever.
It had a battery.
What happened to it? What happened to it? It stopped running.
It did indeed die.
Finally. But
until then, man, what a great.
That was actually a really good
device.
It was
the much maligned Zune.
Yeah, I know, but I loved it. I told everybody, like, I am not a cool person. I don't own cool electronics for the most part, and the Zune fit me perfectly.
It was the antipod.
I had a choice. I had to make a choice at one point which MP3 player I was going to go with.
Yeah.
And I was, it was either the Arcos. Remember those?
I do remember those.
Those were actually really sexy for everything they could do at the time.
Yeah.
Like they were way ahead of the game.
Hmm.
The Zune, the iPad or the iPod, or what I eventually ended up going with was the iRiver. And I went with the iRiver because that little condenser mic on that thing was amazing.
Hmm.
And I used it for podcast recording.
Nice.
In the field, yeah.
Yeah. Yeah. We did interview recording in one of our like single digit episodes of the podcast when we went to see the Da Vinci Code.
Mm-hmm.
Because it was the scandal.
Yeah, I think I've heard you talk
the protest. About that before. But but I used that iRiver because it had such a good microphone on
it. You could do it in the open air.
Yeah, it was this big. You know, it was big enough to put a AAA battery in.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah.
And it the condenser mic was fantastic. It really worked well. But so that's why I ended up going with there. So.
Well, sounds like you got your money's worth out of it.
You don't need one anymore.
No, because I've got my Zooms, my multiple Zooms.
Wow.
My H1.
I was just going to say my phone is my pretty H6. Much, you know, removed all need for an MP3 player anymore.
Oh, for an MP3 player? Yeah.
There's yeah. no need MP3 for them players? Anymore.
That's the last century.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Yeah, I don't have an MP3 player anymore. In fact, like, what's funny is, like, I can use just a USB stick in my car. My car has has the USB port. I can just plug a USB directly into it.
Just play everything off that.
I just plug my phone into my car, so I can play it off my phone.
Well, I do it off of Bluetooth now. The only time that I wanted to do it plugging it in directly was when we were traveling, because it's a pain in the ass when you get out to certain areas.
You lose your signal.
You lose the signal. Because I don't download stuff to the phone just because I have such a big library, and I have to have access to my entire library all the time just because I don't know what I'm going to want to listen to.
Well, see, because the main thing I listen to on my phone is podcasts, but those refresh on a daily basis. So, you know, I have to download those onto my phone. Or I could stream them, but that seems like a lot of more work.
All right, so this is meta. What podcatcher are you using?
Dogcatcher. Yeah.
I'm not familiar with that one.
I was told to download it by somebody, and it's kind of one of the more expensive ones, but I found that I paid for it once several years ago, and I really, really like it. It's rather easy to add new feeds, especially for podcasts that they don't they don't help you with, like more obscure ones.
Yeah.
And then, you know, the tools, you know, when to download and on, you know, if it's okay to download on your data or if you only want to do Wi-Fi or if you only want to download during certain times of day.
Sure.
It's, you know, so it has really nice tools there.
That's cool. What are you still use, I guess, since you have the iPhone, you still use iTunes for your...
Pretty much. I haven't really found much better that does much better. I mean, it's already there. It's already integrated into the whole system.
Well, that and Apple kind of forces out competition of certain features.
They do, but I mean, I catch a lot of stuff streaming anymore. Oh, yeah. I mean, it just makes it so much more convenient to just go to the webpage, start to stream, and avoid iTunes unless you want to. Again, don't have time to read it right away. You can just download it, and I'll listen to it later in the car sometime, which is where I do most of it anyway.
Yeah, I know.
Although lately I've had a lot more spare time in my hands, so I've been catching up a lot of them.
Yeah, so for the Android, because you get Android also.
Yes. Yeah.
Julie uses BeyondPod.
Yeah.
Which is another one that, like, you have to get BeyondPod, and then there's, like, there was an advertising component to it and stuff like that, mm-hmm. but it was, like, it also had nuisanceware built into it, so they really kind of strong-armed you into
buying purchasing
it. So she bought the full version. She likes it. That's what she uses. I used Listen all the way up until like the day they shut down Google Reader. Cause man, I did not want that to go away. Cause yeah. I loved Listen. It was really small, but it worked. It did exactly what I wanted it to. I could put feeds into it manually. I could, because it was attached to Reader, if I'm at my computer, find a feed, hey, add that feed to Google Reader. And there it was. It was in my, so that was convenient, but then it went away.
Yeah.
They pulled Listen off the market like a year before. And so I had to keep a copy of the APK. Mm. I had a copy of it stashed.
Nice.
So that when I got a new phone, I could always have it. And then they went away with Google Reader. Kind of like Julie's copy of Skip-Bo, the card game.
Mm-hmm.
Whenever she gets a new phone, the first question is, hey, I don't want to use that phone until you make sure that Skip-Bo can go on there. Because some guy made a game of Skip-Bo.
Yeah.
didn't have the license for it. Mm. So they came in and smacked him down for it. So he changed the name because with games, rules of games are not copyrighted. Mm-hmm. Presentations of the rules are copyrighted and names are trademarked. But the rules itself, so like I could make a game just like Monopoly.
Yeah.
As long as they changed all the names of everything.
Sure.
But I could make a game called Monopoly and whoever owns that license now, I think Hasbro, they couldn't say a thing about it.
Yep.
They could.
You can make a game called Class Struggle based on the opposite of Monopoly.
Right. Right. Exactly. But
I would play that.
So you could, but you could do that.
It actually does exist.
I bet it does.
Mm-hmm. It's not a surprise. So he made a new game called Spite and Malice, which is hilarious.
Oh no.
But so Julie tried to download that and she swears that whatever he did when he changed it, it changed the game. And now it cheats. I found an APK of Skippo and it's sitting in my Dropbox. And every time we get a new phone, there it goes. Nice. We got Skippo on our phone. So I was using Listen Up until the end. And then I went to Podcast Addict. And I still use the free version of that. And so lazy I haven't got the paid version yet, but it's great. Does everything I want it to do, and they update the software fairly frequently.
Yeah,
like every like week or two there's a new update, and it's not just bug fixes, so works for me.
Great.
Hey, this is Tony
and this is Daryl.
This is Jolie.
We're the Backseat Producers, and that conversation may or may not stay on here. It depends on how long this episode
surely goes. Everybody wants to know about our apps.
Podcast.
There
apps.
Is no more interesting conversation than what app do you use?
I think it's interesting just because we're podcasting, and arguably a certain percentage of the people who are listening to this are listening to this.
Our podcasters too.
They may or may not be podcasters, but they have used an app to pull that podcast into their ear holes.
That's true. So that's true.
Unless they're doing it right from the website or streaming it from their phone, you know. Yeah. So we said before that next week was going to be True Detective, and we're going to call it.
Unfortunately, we've run into a little technical problem.
Yeah, we're going to call an audible on that one and go with Captain America 2, The Winter Soldier, for next week. Plus, it's a little more timely.
Sounds a great plan. Hopefully, True Detective will come out on some sort of streaming service or DVD or whatever so we could watch the episodes.
Yeah.
However long it may take for them to do it.
Well, hopefully we can get that sooner rather than later. So,
yeah.
I think that was all the business kind of stuff that I've got. I know if you are podcast listeners, if you listen to other podcasts, especially sci-fi, fantasy, speculative fiction podcasts, nominations have opened for
the Parsec Awards.
Parsec Awards. ParsecAwards.com.
Mm-hmm.
You can vote. I'm going to tell you right now, do not put us up for a Parsec. It's not worth anyone's time. We aren't specfic enough for them. We talk about speculative fiction movies, but they're looking for... We're a movie podcast. We are not a speculative fiction podcast. We are not devoted to...
Go to Escape Pod or Podcastle or some of the other probably more worthy podcasts that fit that category. Starship Sofa or any one of them.
There's a number of them that are specifically for...
And need your support much worse than you do.
Sci-fi fans. At one point, we would have been a match for Parsec Awards, but they've changed their...
Categories.
They've changed their categories, and they've changed their kind of... their mission statement, as it were. At one point... we would have been a perfect fit, and we were nominated at that point, and we did what we could to put together a good presentation to them. We aren't what they're looking for, and that's fine. It's fine, but
we're not what they're looking for. I'm not looking for them either. So
right, and it that's okay. It's not a big deal, but I still kind of feel some loyalty to some of the people who work on it, just because I knew them and they're good people. So yeah, if you have a speculative fiction, sci-fi, fantasy,
horror,
yeah, any kind of genre podcast you listen to, either like a behind the scenes kind of podcast, like What's the Game of Thrones one they're doing?
Beyond
the
Blood. Wall? I think it's Blood Boars. Blood, Boars, and Gore.
Okay, then that's another one that I didn't know about. There's one that's called like Beyond the Wall or something. So there's, I mean, there's
or
a number
Geek
of those
Week or something like
yeah,
that.
Yeah, there's plenty of them that aren't us. Otherwise, I'll have to do what I did that one year. And well, let's see, the last presentation I put together for Parsec that we were nominated for was Daryl's now infamous
rant
at the beginning of the Hobbit episode, which is still probably one of my most favorite moments recording that, because that was just
it rolled.
Hilarious.
It just was, yeah, it was a stream of consciousness. It was, thing.
We were just sitting here.
It was all milked
have you
up.
Listen to this?
I don't.
Okay.
Got
to.
It's you need to. I'm not gonna spoil the full effect. But at this point, I mean, for a couple weeks before that, I think you were just getting started in your yoga or something. Mm-hmm. So you'd come here and you were just exhausted most nights and low energy. And we start talking about The Hobbit, and Daryl just, like, wakes up on the microphone and just goes into this, like, five-minute-long rant, like, listen, fuckers.
It was the milk talking.
It was. I don't care if you've read the books and seen the movies. They're different things. It is brilliant. I took that whole rant.
Yeah.
And that was our Parsec submission that year. The year before that, because I tried to pick from the speculative fiction stuff, the year before that, we had done Last Temptation of Christ. So I only took clips from the Last Temptation episode because I thought that was pretty clever that was speculative fiction.
Brutal.
Yeah.
Man.
I may have sabotaged the nomination.
Forever.
Or that could have won it for us. You never know. You really never
Things
know.
Things were still pretty fluid back then.
Yeah. Yeah. So don't nominate us.
Please.
I don't want to put together another one of those submissions. Because it's you have to do 10 minutes, but you can only do 3 different sections. And you can't edit it. So you have to find
a stream of consciousness type thing.
Yeah. And it just doesn't unbroken. Work. Yeah. It doesn't work. So you either have to pick one 10-minute chunk or 3 chunks that end up being 10 minutes long. And you can go less than that, but you want to put together as much content as you can.
Mm. Well, you're trying to showcase your best work,
right,
essentially.
Right. And it's hard. Sure. It's just hard for what we do. Plus, they're looking for fiction. I mean, they have gone so far to the fiction side of it, like that a big portion of their awards go to short form fiction, long form fiction, novel length, that kind of thing. So it's the novelists that are podcasting their audiobooks are the ones that they're really the ones that that are going for the Parsecs right now. So anyway, American Hustle.
Yes.
What'd you think?
I thought it was a really good movie. I mean, I was kind of surprised by it. I didn't have a whole lot of expectation other than because only what I had seen in the Oscars presentation, the little clips are there, didn't really give it didn't do it justice. It's only after I got in and watched the movie, then it really started to shine.
It's true. I really rather liked this movie. I don't think when you kind of stack it up against all the other movies that had come out in 2013, it was not my favorite, nor do I think it kind of merited any acting awards.
Even though it was nominated for just about every category.
For every one of them. Yeah. But so I'm not going to say it was like a total standout in that regard, but it had 2 things going for it. One, it was constantly interesting, which is important.
The flow was very good.
And 2, it had Louis C.K. And anything that has Louis C.K. is going to be good for me. I'm always going to call it good, even if it's terrible.
One other thing, too, I thought it captured the flavor of the time, too, which was set in 78 to about 81.
Yeah.
It's like the end, kind of the closing end of the 70s disco era and the beginning of the rather go-go 80s.
Yeah. I'm going to have to, you know, default to others on that one.
Well, I there was other things too. It took also a rather obscure but notable chunk of political history.
Yeah.
And kind of threw a little bit more of a face on what went on with it. Now, granted, this thing was kind of fictionalized because I went back on the Wikipedia and actually kind of read the whole thing. And I
composite characters and whatnot. Yeah.
Right. But it was, like I say, it was a fascinating movie. Once you get into it, you get absorbed in the story and just get carried along with it. Mm-hmm.
So I got two comments. One.
Yeah.
Was a quote from the movie.
Yeah.
And he says, Rosalind was always interesting. Mm-hmm. And I have to say that that quote happened at the end of the movie. It could very easily have happened at the beginning of the movie and foreshadowed the rest of it.
Yeah.
Because Jennifer Lawrence, whenever she was on the screen, was interesting.
Yeah.
It was always, she was always very watchable.
Right.
This movie did not hold my interest at all. I struggled to make it through this movie. It just bored me. And especially when Bradley Cooper came on the screen. Every time Bradley Cooper, it was like there was like this push and pull. Like every time Jennifer Lawrence was on the screen, I was in. Mm-hmm. Every time he was on the screen, I was just like, I am bored with every word that's coming out of your mouth. I hope you're more interesting as a space raccoon.
You know what? I adored Bradley Cooper in this role as kind of he was such a loser. And he was, he had some of the funnier moments in the movie, which is what I really liked about him.
It just bored me. Like, everything he said was boring. Everything he talked about was uninteresting. I know your love for Louis C.K., but
yeah,
I've seen him in other things, and I thought he was way underused. In this.
I would say that too, yeah.
Because he was not interesting in this, and he can be a lot more funny than that.
Well,
and I'm not a fan of him. I'm just not a fan of his work. But granted, I will tell you that my opinion of him was formed watching the HBO show, which was terrible.
The HBO show was great.
It was terrible.
Lucky Louie?
Yeah.
I love Lucky Louie.
So I did not like it. And my opinion was formed on that.
Yeah.
And for what he was doing in that movie, I thought they could have put anybody else in that role. It wasn't interesting. I don't think he brought anything to that character that anybody else couldn't have done.
I think he does one thing really, really well. He does lovable loser so well. And he also, because he and Bradley Cooper had the funniest, what I think is the funniest exchange in that movie.
Was
that scene where
they show up in the office. Where you learn why he looks like he got the shit beat out of him.
Yeah, why he's got the eye patch
and
then the butterfly bandage on his eye. And then they keep cutting back to that scene in the bathroom where they're both pointing their guns at each other.
Yeah, that was good. That was good. But I don't know.
And then the ice fishing story. I mean, that whole time, every time he told the ice fishing story. Oh man. I thought it was just, is so funny. And that's the thing is, for me, is if a movie is trying to be funny, it better hit. And if it misses, then I'm not going to forgive it lightly. And this one, you know, I think David O. Russell's pretty good at recognizing what's funny. So I respect that.
And see, the thing is, I loved Silver Linings Playbook. Loved it.
Yeah, this movie I didn't like it so much.
And this movie just didn't sing to me.
Well, did you see... have you seen any of his other movies? Have you seen Three Kings or...
Well, we reviewed The Fighter. That's another one of his movies.
Yeah.
Right.
Yeah.
With Amy Adams and Christian Bale.
Yeah.
Right.
In the lead roles.
Yeah.
Looking back over a little chart of this director's actors, he tends to choose the same group of actors over and over.
Sure.
And there are some, like his first few pictures with Russell Crowe, he'll never work again. And some of the others, too, will apparently have problems.
He's got a movie coming out with question marks called Old St. Louis.
Nice, I guess.
I have seen...
It could be about anything.
Yeah, well, it'd probably get, again, a production...
Yeah.
Production name just to throw off the...
Right.
I have seen Three Kings, but I think I saw it in 1999 when it came out. So I really... I can't speak to it anymore. That's been 15 years. I vaguely remember thinking it was an interesting movie, but I don't. I saw I Heart Huckabees. Kind of have the same feeling about that. That I just don't remember enough of it to confidently say one thing or another about it.
Yeah.
But The Fighter, Silver Linings, American Hustle, I've seen all three of those.
Yeah.
I like the first two. This one just, I don't know, just, I felt, and maybe this was an unfair comparison because people told me, because I had seen places that this was very Scorsese-like.
Oh, yes.
And
except for one big thing. Between this and a Scorsese movie, the female leads are not just prostitutes or victims.
Yeah.
That's true. This movie did not have that female heat.
Mm-hmm. The super Madonna, aggro.
That's either horror Madonna complex. Yeah.
Because all the women actors in this movie did a bang up job of actually channeling their character really well. You had the Amy Adams of Sydney, whose action is so good, and her whole con is such a con that she even cons the con man.
Yeah.
I mean, he was like, when the one scene in there when she tells him, like, I'm not English. What's this accent? It's American. It's fake. No, it can't be.
Yeah.
I loved you because of that. I thought you were real British. Yeah. Like, come on, you're a con man. You already know when she's conning you. And you can kind of see the wheels start turning in his head is, you know, oh my God, you know, like, you know, I let my heart get in the way of my brains. Like in the first scene, he tells her when they meet the FBI agent for the first time, he said, you know, he says to her, you're thinking with your heart, not with your brain.
Mm-hmm.
And she's just so taken in on, he knows this guy is not legit. And he puts the check back down and, you know, like, doesn't want anything to do with it. And like, uh-oh, boom. She's the one who's been conned.
Yeah. Yeah. I think I might have enjoyed this movie more had we not just done Wolf of Wall Street.
Yeah.
Because Wolf of Wall Street was so interesting and so dynamic and so in your face, and it...
Well, just a total manic energy, yeah.
Yeah, and it's like, he's not here, but I've heard him use this phrase, it insisted upon itself.
He does say that a lot, doesn't he?
I think Wolf of Wall Street insisted upon itself that you watch it.
Yeah.
It dared you to turn your head away.
Because if you did, you'd miss something.
Right. And with this one, I was copying... I screwed up my Google Drive, my pictures, and double copied them. So I had duplicates all over the place. And I was in the process of eliminating duplicates. And I was more interested in eliminating duplicate copies of my pictures than watching the movie. It bored me. It never grabbed my attention.
Well, it's kind of hard to make, you know, a slam bang action flick out of this subject. And I think that's kind of what the director was kind of going for in this case. You know, most scams and crime capers are long, slow builds of getting people into the position. And there's nothing really slam bang about them. I mean, the real action happens between Christian Bale and his character, Gosselin.
Yeah.
Now, then when those two get going back and forth, you know, you see her just incredible ditziness versus his total rationality. It's an interesting dynamic when she tells him, it wasn't a fire, I put it out. It's not a fire, there's a great big scorch mark on the thing. It was just a little one.
The science oven.
No, yes. I like the part there. She tells her son, with the grab the fire oven. Extinguisher. Oh, not that one. It's empty. We have another one handy.
Not again. Yeah. Not another fire. Yeah, the whole sequence with the science oven was pretty hilarious. And it, like when she puts that.
Yes.
The tin tray
with the aluminum cap, well,
and I think there was still a fork in it too.
There it is.
Because I did that once.
Purpose?
Well, no, not on purpose. Because I was get home from school and you want a little snack, and there's two pieces of pie left. Mm-hmm. So I cut the pieces of pie and I put one of them on the plate for my brother, and he goes and has his. And I'm like, well, I'm not going to dirty up another plate. Put it in the microwave to heat it up. And I heard this weird sound, and I turn around and look, and there's like this blue lightning just dancing all along the edge of the pie pan. It was, fortunately, that was the worst of it.
But, yeah, we used to do that with the CDs and the... in our dorm room microwaves, because they were provided by the school, so we didn't give a shit. Sure. So, you know.
Throw the Jiffy Pop in.
Throw a CD in there. Oh. That's hilarious for, like, 10 seconds. And then, you know, the awful smell.
Mm-hmm. The awful smell. The fire! Just a little one!
So Julie and I watched this together because she wanted to see it. So I made time to watch together.
Yeah.
First comment, seeing Christian Bale putting himself together.
Mm. Yes. At
the very beginning, she's like, huh, I didn't think it was possible to make Christian Bale look that bad.
I need to tell you, that was kind of the look.
Oh, yeah. Yeah, it was a very leisure suit Larry look.
I forgot just how bad maroon over jackets looked on guys with a yellow ascot. I mean, people actually wore those. Oh, my God, yes.
The look on your face. We need to just take a picture of the look on your face right now, because it's selling the moment.
Well, see, because I had significant numbers of opinions about the fashion in this movie, but it was mostly about what Amy Adams wore.
Yes.
Because I'm sort of like...
Did she ever wear a bra?
Well, that was the thing. That was the first thing I said when I walked out of the movie was like, did they just not make bras in the 70s? Is this what we're supposed to get out of this?
Breasts were much firmer then.
The movie starts, and like the first scene she's in, Julie says, I was reading an article about how they think that bras cause breast cancer because it does. She was explaining it. And I was like, what? She said, well, I was just looking at this last scene. Can't help but think of not wearing a bra.
Yeah.
I was like, any dress she wore the whole movie, she had a bra on.
Yeah.
Yeah.
There were all those low cut dresses with the ample arm and armholes and everything else.
Yeah. And I, you know, I mean, that's fine, I suppose. She also had the wrap dress, which, you know, I'm all over that. That's fine. I have zero problem with those.
Yes. Her character was such a huge contrast to his. I mean, he was the, like, something that fell out of the used clothes bin, and she was, like, the hottest thing in the whole place. Mm-hmm. So it made a nice little bookend for those two.
And that's the thing that I think Amy Adams is. I never complain when she shows up, because she always shows. Like, in this role, she was really great. And so I sort of feel like my favorite characters in this movie were definitely Amy Adams and Jennifer Lawrence. So,
well, definitely they did carry the movie pretty well.
Yeah.
Now, and one thing I noticed about Christian Bale is his ability in all his movies is to change his physical being to match the character, which is not easy for an actor to do. I mean, it looked in the trivia part, he actually gained 40 pounds.
Right.
Yeah.
And actually injured himself in the process of doing it.
Right.
But in, like, say, he in the fighter, I mean, he looked like he was cut from a piece of marble.
Mm-hmm.
Batman movies, again, chiseled physically. And how he, again, can mold his body to fit his characters is always interesting.
See, but that's the thing. He did it wrong. If he's going to be fat, he has to stack his fat rolls one after the other. So, you know, or then if he's going to get, really emaciated.
You'll notice this when you watch True Detective, it's Matthew McConaughey. And you can see that, and I don't know the exact schedule of it, but he made that either probably right before or right after he did Dallas Buyers Club. Mm-hmm. And he's got the same look.
Mm-hmm.
Like, he's really thin compared to how you're used to seeing Matthew McConaughey. But he's also at one point playing a very young man, and then later playing kind of a burnout.
Yeah, a much older man.
Yeah. And because he's kind of a burnout, he's got that real 10,000
yards there.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Well, and just real, like, tired skin's look. Loose and just really thin and, yeah.
But, you know, that's the hallmark of, I guess, a good actor. I mean, he can mold himself to the character.
I don't know if that's necessarily a hallmark of a good actor, though. He just, I mean, he changes his physical appearance, but I think what is more telling as a good actor is that he creates this persona that's different.
Right.
Like, his persona is different as kind of the cocksure Bruce Wayne character, the beaten down Bruce Wayne character that then goes back to being cocksure again. And then this guy who's just...
Irving Rosenfield, who's the rather, I wouldn't say he's beaten down, but very, he's smarter than he should be.
He's kind of like just like a schlub.
He is. I mean, he's just he's low end. He knows he's. Well, tell you what. He knows he's a low end guy. He's just a con artist running little cons on people.
Yeah.
And he suddenly this is something that brings in a movie. He realizes halfway through when the mob boss shows up. Oh my God! I'm in so far over my head, and everybody else is running into this where they should be running away. I mean, he's always trying to put the brakes on the Richie. To say, okay, hey, we started this as, you know, we were just going to grab four con artists and I was going to get out. Now you're going after a mob boss. Now you're going after a congressman. You're going after the mayor of Camden, New Jersey. My God, when does this thing ever stop? This guy is just, is going nuts with his power. He's getting to the point, his own character is getting so crazy. He's going in and beating up his boss because he won't give him the resources he needs to reel this stuff in.
Yeah.
And could you imagine that happening today? A mid-level FBI agent going in and smacking around his superiors and saying, you know, I don't care what you think, you're a wimp, and I've got a big fish here, and I've got the prosecuting attorney, the Attorney General of the United States breathing down my neck, and you're not paid. You're treating this like this is some nickel and dime operation. I have to agree with him on a couple of parts. When this thing was starting to get bigger and bigger, the resources never came.
Right.
But he's the one making it bigger and bigger and bigger because he sees the stars in his eyes that he's going to be, you know, agent of the year, or he's going to be the director of the FBI because he's bringing in the biggest fish of all.
Right.
Whereas, you know, Irving is saying, you know, he's saying, like, this is crazy. I mean, we're just getting in way too deep. I mean, I'm the little guy. He's not going to suffer. I'm going to get burned on this whole operation. And he doesn't see that, nor does he care.
I don't know. I guess my biggest thing was that for being a con movie, it just wasn't.
Well, it's not really a con movie. It's more of a caper film. But
even so, it just wasn't.
I know. It does not move at a really fast pace.
I'm used to things that I think I kind of got spoiled on Leverage.
Mm-hmm.
Like I got into that procedural mindset of a con caper that I expect it to happen in a certain way, and I expect to be drawn in and at some point be let in on the gag. On
the gaff at the end, yeah.
Yeah, and it just, I felt like it was all projected too much. Like, I know what's going on. I understand what's happening. And this isn't interesting. It's, you're not holding anything back from me. You're not teasing me with anything. I see everything you're doing and you're projecting it, which is fine if you're telling me, if you're doing a character study, you know, you're not making this about the plot.
This guy's all about. This is not really about the caper itself. It's about the three individuals involved in this.
Right.
Well, a four-way relationship going on here between Irving and Sydney, Richie, and
Rosalind.
Rosalind. It's that whole four-way between them.
Yeah. Rosalind's always interesting.
Yes. Yeah, she's the wild card in this because she's the one who's standing off to the side, you know, only hearing parts of the conversation and making all this stuff up.
Yeah. I mean, she was what I found most compelling about her was she was kind of the force of nature that you don't really know how things are going to shake out. She was the question mark in all of this.
Right. And again, he's not telling her because she doesn't really need to be a part of this. But she keeps insisting on being a part of it.
Yeah.
Especially towards the middle when she starts bringing in, you know, she starts flirting with the mob guys there. And, like, it's like she doesn't realize what these guys are all about. He does.
Yeah.
She's just doing it.
She's crazy.
Well, she's not so much crazy. She's just, well, I wouldn't say uninformed. She's just naive.
Yeah.
She just thinks, I'm having a bunch of fun with the guys and I'm driving my husband crazy.
Right, right.
Well, that also, there was a really good scene that was between the two women when they saw each other and they locked eyes for the first time. It's like, I know who she is.
Yeah.
And it was,
it's that redhead whore.
Yeah.
Ditzy wife.
And I think that's when Rosalind really became, that's when her interesting factor really kicked in, as opposed to somebody that was just comic relief. Mm-hmm. I mean, when she showed up before that, it was all about, it was just a gag. It was a punchline. It was, you know, it was the that she started the fire and that they're going to fight about that. And there wasn't much to her character until that moment when it was like, oh, I know what this is all about. And it she had no clue what it was about. But in her mind, she knew what it was about. And what it was about was, that's that whore you're cheating on me. Yeah. And I'm going to show you. I'm going to show you by flirting with all these guys.
Yeah.
Not knowing that all these guys were mob guys.
They're all made guys. Like, you don't really... But she doesn't care. They're just guys.
Yeah.
But see, and that just amps up the fact that she's comic relief. She's a loose cannon, but she's got reasons for it. I mean, her reasons are valid.
I think that the fact that her character exists the way that it does is kind of further proof that it's really not a story-driven movie so much as a character-driven movie, mm-hmm. which I don't particularly mind because, you know, she's kind of the primary example in this case. But, you know, the characters are all very good, but you can't put the same rules on a movie like this and expect it to be exactly like another con movie or another caper movie because it's not going to live up to that expectation. I think the only other thing you could kind of say that it tries to do some of the classic like period movie kinds of things, like, you know, really overemphasizing the music, the period music, which they did.
Mm-hmm.
I
was singing along to a lot of this
movie.
I sang along to a lot of this movie. And that, I mean, that kept drawing me back in. It's like, oh, I know this song.
Yeah, that was, yeah. It sure was period, wasn't it?
Yeah.
Yeah, I know. They tried really hard to just capture that chunk of time.
Yeah.
And probably is, again, depending on the age of the person seeing this, is not going to get a lot of the references as much as someone who grew up in that era.
Yeah.
I mean, some of this might... I mean, I vaguely remember what Ab Scam was all about. I heard all those songs. I could see how they were tying them into the moment at which they were trying to... the tone they were trying to set. Mm-hmm. Some with various degrees of failure or not. But I had to go back and remind myself what Ab Scam was all about, too. Oh, it was about that. Because it was big in the news at the time.
Mm-hmm.
But I don't think, I mean, with everything else that has gone on between 1978 and now, I mean, by today's standards, that whole thing is really, really, really minor. Would be a really minor scandal today.
Well, I mean, corrupt New Jersey politicians, I think, are always going to go over they're well.
If there are corrupt politicians in New Jersey, for shame.
Yeah, and I think that's all.
Congressmen who take bribes. Oh, what a revelation there.
It's just going to keep happening, though.
Well, it's going to keep happening, but the thing is, it was still a part of America that was still pretty naive about what was going on.
Hmm.
The general public was still pretty, I mean, like he even mentioned, Irving's character, I mean, Irving mentions that he says, you're going after these politicians. Hey, we're just out of water. We're just not that far away from Watergate. People aren't going to really like this stuff. I mean, they've already been demoralized by that whole scandal.
Right.
And now you're throwing this thing in even more?
Yeah.
And he had almost, I think, a valid point at that point. He was like, he's still trying to put the brakes on this guy as to, he said, why are you doing this? I mean, granted, just another feather in your cap, but, you know, you're just destroying everything else around you even more. And you don't care.
Yeah. Which I don't know that this movie held up any kind of particularly big stakes in that regard. The only exception being Carmine.
Mm-hmm.
Because, you know, he was the only one you were made to care about.
Well, he was more of a tragic character because he really was trying to rebuild the place.
Yeah.
Unfortunately, he let his emotions get in the way of his better judgment. Even at that one point, he mentioned, he says, I walked out of there and you chased me down and drugged me back.
Mm-hmm.
Well, you could have kept walking.
Yeah.
Yeah, but the tenet of any good heist or caper is that you can't con an innocent man.
Mm-hmm.
He wasn't innocent.
Oh, no. He knew how things worked.
He was the better of most of them.
Mm-hmm.
But he wasn't innocent.
Well, no.
And I wouldn't even say that his story was tragic. He just got caught. His biggest crime was that he was wrapped up in it.
Well, he was wrapped up in it, but
he didn't profit
from him himself. He
right.
was trying to put it all back into the community. And he knew this was a corrupt system, and this is how he got him. He was just a practical politician. Hey, I know that these guys are all on the take. I know that I have to make deals. The question is, I'm not doing it just for my own personal enrichment. I'm doing it for the betterment of this community, which has already been beat to crap.
And I don't think that the tragedy is necessarily the crime itself. It was the fact that the friendship between the two of them.
That was the tragedy. He trusted this guy so much and believed in him so well. But that's the point of a con.
Yeah.
Befriend and betray.
Yeah.
I mean, the fact that Irving
the tragedy was that he had 17 children. Jesus.
He's a busy guy.
What? Did I miss something?
Yes.
They had like 7 or 8 kids.
Plus a bunch of adoptees, too.
Yeah.
Well, that's the thing is, though. Again, there's another tragedy there.
Her Bride of Frankenstein hair.
You know, it took me forever to figure out who she was, because the whole time I saw this movie the first time, I was like, who is that? I know who that is, until I eventually figured out that she was on SVU, which I know.
But as you say,
if any ladies are listening, big SVU fans.
Well, that's, yeah, like you said, you mentioned the fact that the friendship was the tragedy.
Yeah.
I mean, even so much so that Irving himself really feels bad about the whole thing.
Yeah.
He never intended for this guy to get in as deep as he did. But it did. I mean, it was very ballsy of him to go to him and tell him that, you know, like, you've been had.
Mm-hmm.
And probably wanted the little beat down because that's his penance for, you know, destroying this guy.
Right.
But he's also, he realizes he's not just dragging this guy into the whole fray. He's dragging his whole family into it, too.
Yeah.
I mean, they're going to suffer because of this. Even though he says he only got 18 months. Hey, it's still 18 months.
Right. Yeah, that's not, you don't just bounce back from prison. Or maybe you do. I don't know.
Well, and most likely he was not sent to a maximum security thing.
Well,
he probably
even
went
so,
to a,
it's still
a club fed, but still, it's still a prison.
You still have to, bouncing back from prison is no picnic. It's
especially from a guy who's falling from that higher pedestal, too.
Yeah.
I mean, in this whole movie, everybody kind of walked away with some damage. I mean, the only good
thing... Rosalind in the neck brace.
Well, yeah.
And the car got a little dinged up.
But, you know, she has a consolation prize. I mean, the fact is, you know, he still has his son. He still walked away from... I mean, Irving and Sydney are about the only two who kind of come out of this thing with anything left.
Yeah.
Only because they arranged it that way.
Right.
But we never really... We never see what, you know, that the field of damage they all left behind.
I want to know how Irv and Roz get together. Like, I want that story. Like, I feel like he had to con her into that. I don't know. I just...
that's the problem I have with... I can't... A certain part of me really, really loves Jennifer Lawrence. And then a certain part of me is like, she's only 20... What is she, 22 now?
Something like that, yeah. She's really young.
She's just too young for these roles that they're putting her in.
Well,
or that David O. Russell is putting her in.
David O. Russell is actually putting her. Yeah, he's the one that's putting her in those roles.
Yeah, these really adult roles.
The thing is, I kind of feel like she's holding her own, and like the way they make her look in this movie, she could have been 26, which is completely reasonable. For that character to be in her mid-20s. There's no reason that character had to be any older than that.
She's 24.
She is 24 right
1990.
Now. 1990. Well, there you go.
Yeah, granted, again, I pictured her as, you know, somewhat older.
I mean, again, the makeup. A whole lot older.
Well, the makeup in this movie made her look a little older than 25 or 24. I mean, I thought she was in her mid or early 30s. Assuming,
I wouldn't have even gone that high.
Well, her son was, what, 10 years? It looks like he was about 8 to 10 years old there.
Which, you know what, in the mid to late 70s, if a 20-year-old have a... My mom was married when she was 18. Yeah. I was born 9 months after she was married.
Yes.
You know, my mom was 19 when I was born.
Mm-hmm.
So, and, you know, married. And so it, you know, that's not surprising to me for an 18, 19, 20-year-old. To have a baby in the early 70s.
Yeah.
Cause that's,
especially in New Jersey.
because that's the way it was.
Maybe I'm just harboring. I'm harboring residual resentment from Silver Linings Playbook. That's what it is, probably.
And see, I didn't have a problem with her in that one either. Except I thought she was great.
Not old enough. She was just not old enough.
No, she was
far too young for that part.
I disagree. If it was the character from the book, yes. But the character presented in the movie, no, she was fine. Because they actually presented a much older character in the book.
Right.
The book is considerably different from the movie.
Sure.
But like, it's one of those book movie differences that they're, you know, completely different. But man, each of them speak really well to their mediums, and the heart of the story is there. So no, I didn't have a problem with her in that one at all.
I'm
yoga just... pants. Yoga pants erase everything. Sticking up for Adam,
yeah,
not being here.
Clearly.
we have to defend the yoga pants. Let's
talk about scissoring next or whatever. Whatever it is. Yeah, let's make the hand motion that.
Well, you have to.
Great for the listener at home.
You have to.
So this movie it was nominated for a bunch of awards, but got nothing as far as I can tell.
It did not win.
You know what?
Did not win any Oscars, but it did win some Golden Globes.
From the movies that we have seen so far.
Yeah.
The Oscar movies we've seen and some of the roles we've seen nominated and awarded. Mm-hmm. I'm fine with this movie being in the crowd of 10.
But
if this was down to 5, I don't think this
you're
movie
right.
would
yeah, This would have been a weak so contender.
I think this is one of the weaker ones that we've seen.
Mm-hmm.
Because we've at this point we've done Gravity, we've done this, we've done
Wolf of Wall Street,
Nebraska.
Yeah, this definitely doesn't fall.
I would say this and Nebraska would be on the far end of the scale. This is probably in the weak crowd, just because of Nebraska what it is. It's a very character driven drama. This is a very character driven story too, but if you compare it to Dallas Buyers Club.
Yeah.
That was a somewhat much stronger story.
I agree. And I think in the terms of the ones we've seen so far, I make no bones about Gravity being on the low end. And I think this kind of is at that same point. It's just it doesn't deserve to stand next to Dallas Buyers Club. It doesn't deserve to stand next to Wolf of Wall Street. You know, there's a few other movies that we haven't seen yet, so it's hard to say.
Right.
What the real top five would be, which is kind of what I would look at, is these are the movies that would be nominated 10 years ago as the top five. But I don't see them. I think if they would be in the top five, that would be the movie that it's like, man, that's definitely the one that everybody can cross off their list right now.
Yeah. I would say that this movie, as well as Wolf of Wall Street, probably suffers the same problem, which is that they're funny. And, you know, they just don't give awards to funny movies, which is sad because,
not true.
Well, they don't give...
not consistently. They do.
Best Picture winners don't go to funny movies, or even dramas that have any kind of lighthearted content in it. They tend to go to really heavy stuff.
They also don't go to genre movies, mm-hmm. whether they deserve it or
well,
not.
The fact that Gravity got in there at all was kind of interesting.
I don't think so. I think it has... I think it wasn't...
Because sci-fi movies usually have a hard time.
I would not call Gravity a sci-fi movie.
I
can't in good conscience call Gravity a sci-fi movie. Because nothing about the science of it is fictional other than the stuff they just didn't get right.
Okay.
Right. I mean, it wasn't there was nothing speculative about the science in that movie.
Right,
it was
the technology
all real.
Was based on
all right. But a German movie for being, I guess, an action film about the best place you can put this. It's not really a drama.
Right.
So just to give a
what's not a drama?
Well, just a moment here. Just to give you a recap on the Oscar nominees for this year was American Hustle, Captain Phillips, Dallas Buyers Club, Gravity, Her, Nebraska, Philomena, 12 Years a Slave, and Wolf of Wall Street. And we've seen maybe about half of them.
Six, I think.
Yeah. We still haven't seen Her, Captain Phillips, Philomena, 12 Years a Slave.
Yeah.
And 12 Years a Slave was the big winner.
Right. Right.
The one I least want to see.
Mm-hmm. I actually do want to see that one. But
I still have yet to see her and
Phillips. I haven't seen any of those four.
But her, those are the her and was kind of one of the most controversial.
Her is more of science fiction.
True.
Her is totally a science fiction movie.
Because it's an AI. Mm-hmm.
Yeah.
Yeah.
A man falling in love with his robot, yes.
Right. I mean, it's set in the future. It's all based on future technology.
Sure.
Closer to, yes, science fiction.
Yeah. I would go so far as to say, oh, it is that's totally a science fiction movie. But, I just think that generally they don't give awards to funny movies, which is, to me personally, is, you know, a big comedy fan. I think that's a damn shame. But
because comedy is kind of hard to define. I mean, what's funny to some person is usually not funny to another. Just getting nominated.
I think that's the one thing that the Golden Globes do better than the Oscars is that they split the
categories. Which is nice, except that they split it as they put musicals in the same category as comedies, which is bullshit.
Mm-hmm. Well,
because if there's a musical nominated, it always wins.
And I don't see how.
Against comedies.
I don't see how, because they're all terrible. There's very few musicals that are any good.
Yeah, I can count on this hand the number of musicals that I've really, really enjoyed.
Well, again, it's a taste thing. I mean, a musical can be a drama or a story set to music, and
well,
depending on who's composing the music and who's doing it, it is either memorable or turgid.
Well, the other problem,
Disney is way noted for capping the musical churn down tight.
Yeah, but I don't like Disney. But I still don't like them.
The thing is though, they have raised the musical and a comedy, and combined the musical and comedy to a high art enough so that they make serious dollars doing it. In fact, it's very unusual
I'm not, I mean.
And the Disney musical is almost always solid and watchable and rewatchable. Simple.
Yes. And they have raised that whole thing to a high art of commercial and artistic success.
Yeah. Yeah.
I mean, most of us here could probably sing one or two songs out of just about every Disney musical ever made.
And they have made mistakes and they've made missteps along the way, but they've built a fan base that is very forgiving of those mistakes and missteps. You look like you're ready to just explode.
Oh gosh,
I would put.
It's just so bad. They're just.
Name a bad one.
Bad is subjective because I'm just not going to like
them. That's the thing about musicals. They're very subjective.
Well,
they're very targeted to an audience.
I'll disagree because there is good musical and there's bad musical. And there's also people who will forgive a bad story because they like the music that goes along with it.
Yes, they like the songs and the orchestration.
Yeah, I can't tell you how many people can't give me a good argument why Les Mis is a good movie because they like the songs. There are two arguments why when I say Les Mis is a terrible movie, is the songs are great and they're performed well. That does not a good movie make.
Technically, yes. It's
But
it's all
the
song.
That's the way the book was. Bullshit.
Yeah.
That's bullshit. The idea that because the book was that way that we have to make the movie that way is the dumbest idea ever. They're two different genres. There are two different mediums, I should say. There's no reason. There's no singing in the book. What? You just made terrible assumptions based on the song so you could have people you like singing them.
Mm-hmm.
That doesn't make a good movie. But there can be good musicals. People just don't want them.
I don't know that that's true.
Well, let's put it this way. Musicals in the movies have had a period where they were very, very popular. And then they kind of disappeared for a while.
Right.
Just things got oh so serious.
Yeah.
And then they started getting less serious and less serious. And people started saying, well, gee, we haven't done a musical in a long time. I mean, the conditions are right for it.
Right.
People's tastes run in cycles.
Yeah. You know, and people can say, oh, well, they made that shitty Chicago movie. So all love musicals again.
Well, this is what I say. The things have changed since a lot of them. I mean,
Chicago was better than Moulin Rouge. Chicago was better than Les Mis.
I disliked all of them, so.
I like Moulin Rouge. It's one of my favorite musicals.
That one wasn't for me.
But it was perfect for me. I love it.
Yeah.
I mean, it's a guilty pleasure.
That's just the thing. There are musicals that
I like it because it's a very corny B movie, but it works really well.
A lot of it also depends on if you like the style of music that's being presented. That's if you don't like the style of music, nothing about it is
going to
save it. You're never going to like a movie. You know what? Give me a hip hop musical. Guess what? It could be about Breaking Bad and could be performed as well and tell the exact same story. And you know what? I'm probably not going to like it because I don't like the style of music. And it's not something that I can stand to listen to for that period of time.
Planet of the Apes, the musical.
Was that a thing?
It was parodied in The Simpsons.
Okay.
Yeah.
That it actually, yes.
It might be a real thing. I think, yeah, I mean, they do. I heard somebody talking about the stage version of Point Break. I think they did Point Break the musical as a stage play, which to me is like, that sounds fantastic. And they should make that movie. I've watched that.
Get your hands off me, you damn dirty apes.
Wow.
Yes.
Wow.
Yes, you can just picture the whole thing. There are some movies that just don't work in that medium.
Yeah. No, I agree.
And it's all a matter of taste and writing and stage performance.
And sometimes
you could probably take any movie and make it work, but the degree of success will probably be very variable.
And I'll give you a good example of taking songs and music that people adore, and you can make a terrible movie or stage performance out of it, but people just flock to it. Like, it's like no end.
Cats.
Mamma Mia.
Mamma Mia.
Because
you know
like,
what? You know what?
Give me that ABBA one, right?
You know what? I gotta admit, I like ABBA.
Sure.
I like the music.
But not that much.
It's fun.
Who doesn't?
You know what? It's fun. It's catchy. It's got that fun, infectious quality to it. But God damn, that stage performance, we saw it. We went to the Fox to see it because Julie just absolutely wanted to see it. She heard so many good things about it.
Yeah.
My favorite part was when the story was over and they did like a 15, 20 minute long medley of ABBA songs. And it was just, the people were out there just singing and dancing. They're not even trying to have the pretense of a story. It's just a performance. And it was like, man, this is great.
It's a trip down memory lane.
That story was dumb and made no sense.
Yeah.
It was just nonsense.
That's entertainment.
To me, the only way you're going to make me enjoy a musical, because I'm such a cynic, is if you make it integral to the story so that people aren't unnaturally breaking into song. So, I don't know if you ever saw the movie Once.
No.
Tiny little movie about, and basically the story is a guy who is a busker in Scotland. He himself is Scottish, and he meets this girl who's a piano player, and so they play music throughout because obviously they're playing music. So
sure.
There's all these original songs, and the music is fantastically good, and it's natural, and the story is very sweet. So you know, you could. Because that movie is a musical and because it was a really good story, I'm going to say, yeah, of course, that I can tolerate that. I have zero problems with that. But that's only because it's supposed to be there. It's natural. But I don't, but like Les Mis, I'm gonna be automatically suspicious.
It's just a bad story.
I don't know if it's a bad story.
No,
it's just poorly executed.
It's a bad story. She died of prostitution.
Yeah.
That's a fact.
I thought it was like...
No, it was prostitution. The jump in logic is she was a prostitute,
mm-hmm.
So she died.
Yeah, yeah, because that's like...
But she was sick. What was she sick with? Prostitution. She had...
She's just full of it.
She was full of the whoren.
But don't you know, the whores always get it in the end, man.
Yes.
Only if they're well paid.
Extra for that, big boy.
Yeah. So, I don't know. This movie, I almost feel like I didn't know what it was trying to do. I didn't know that it was trying to lead me into a character study. It had too much plot for that.
Yeah.
I think that's the one way that it fails in being as Scorsese-like. Like, because I kept hearing that comparison, And the thing about a Scorsese movie,
Other than that, it's period and it's about...
It's supposed to be a character study, and it's about shady people doing shady things.
Well, it's about small shady people.
Right.
Not big people, small shady people doing shady things and getting sucked into something much bigger than they are.
Right. Right. And you naturally bring that comparison to Wolf of Wall Street because those movies came out at about the same time.
Mm-hmm. Right.
And man, Wolf of Wall Street just was superior in every way, with the exception of being really rough for some people to handle.
It was coarse. It's raw. It is. But you know, these are coarse and raw people.
Right. And it wasn't as palatable. Those bad people weren't as palatable as the bad people in American Hustle were.
Right.
It's easier to watch those people because those people could have been anybody. depending on the age of the person watching it, that could have been people of my generation or my parents' generation or my grandparents' generation, depending on exactly how old you are when you see this movie. You can see those people and you know those kind of people.
They're everyday.
They're much more pedestrian than Jordan Belfort is by any stretch. I mean, that guy is just, but he's a cartoon character too.
Right.
I mean, he's so over the top. But they present it in such a way.
Yeah, but you don't think some of these characters were a little over the top?
No. They could have been the people next door.
They were, but I mean, I have to go back to the first presentation of the main male character in each story. You have Jordan Belfort snorting coke out of a whore's ass.
Actually, I had this conversation with Sean. He contends that he was blowing coke into her ass.
No, I think he was snorting it.
It might have been. It's hard to say. I'd have to rewatch it.
Yes,
let's. to see exactly which.
Because there's definite like.
It could have been a little bit of a space ball suck and blow thing.
Well,
get a little bit for him, a little bit for her. It was sharing.
Right, exactly. But he contends sharing. It was blowing coke into her ass, which
that's how sharing works.
Sharing is caring.
So you have that, and then you have Christian Bale putting on his hairpiece for 5 uncomfortable minutes.
Mm-hmm.
I gotta admit, that was more uncomfortable to watch.
Mm-hmm. The hairpiece.
The hairpiece was more uncomfortable to watch than Jordan Belfort and the coke and the whore's ass. However,
I don't know. I thought that was a little more uncomfortable. It was only because I was sitting between my parents when I saw it.
Well, there's that. But yeah, I don't know. It just didn't feel it. It felt like there was an inferior execution to it. There was just something that just wasn't as tight about it, and it just wasn't as interesting to me.
It's not enough Louis C.K. We all know that to be true. In your heart, you know that that's true.
I'm never going to say that. There's. I will say that he was underutilized for somebody who is a comedic actor. They could have done more with him there. I don't know what, but then again, that's the character they had. So I just feel like he was wasted. It felt almost like stunt casting.
It could have been, except that
but he's not as well known. So it's not like he's still pretty unknown.
I don't know that's true. I mean, I would say he's among if you're just talking about stand-up comedians, he's among the more visible stand-up comedians.
But really, how visible are stand-up comedians anymore?
Well,
it's kind of like saying that Neil Gaiman is incredibly well known as a fantasy author, as a speculative fiction author. There's a lot of people that won't know who that person is.
Sure.
But for people in the know, yeah, know who he is. Right. Of course.
I don't know. I think people get stand-up comedy. People consume a fair amount of it still. I don't think there's.
I don't think it's as much as it was 20 years ago.
Well, I think it's kind of getting a bit of a resurgence because it's simply because it's so much more accessible now. It's so easy to get, and
it's so easy to get 20 years ago. Comedy Central lived and died on stand-up comedy.
Sure.
That channel wouldn't exist were it not for stand-up comedy.
And they still do, though. I mean, they still, part of their business is that they promote certain comedians, and they still do the stand-up specials for them and stuff. So, you know, it's certainly not going away.
Yeah, but
you can still see stand-ups on HBO, HBO specials, Showtime specials. You know, you still have comedians that occasionally sell out Madison Square Garden, so it's still happening.
Yeah, I know. It just doesn't feel like it used to be.
And well, maybe is I'm it just because you're paying less attention to it?
Probably, because it's terrible.
How could you say that it's terrible when stand-up
comedy,
so many different kinds of comedians that are doing all kinds of very different and interesting things? And I think that there's, now that there's a venue for interesting people to do interesting things, and then, you know, some of it fails and some of it is really spectacular, but because there's a way for it to get out there, you can find very alternative voices than you used to be able to.
But alternative doesn't mean good.
Sometimes it does,
and
though.
And it's never meant good.
Sometimes it, I mean, people could say Carlin was an alternative comedian. Carlin did not follow the standard structure. I mean, you could say that about a lot of people. You could have said that about Richard Pryor. And
well, sure. But you're talking about individuals who are standouts.
Right, but that had an alternative way of doing things. I mean, the ones that are great, I feel, for the most part, are the ones that can kind of produce an alternative voice, or a voice that hasn't really been heard in comedy before. So one of the reasons that Louis C.K. became Louis C.K. as a stand-up comedian is because he had been, like, you know, he'd been gigging for decades. And he'd been writing on shows, and he wasn't famous until he totally changed his act and the way that he did his things. And he became, his voice was, you know, he's a family man, but he's doing this really, just really dark and personal stuff. And people really related to what he was saying. And so that's the point at which he started becoming more famous, and people kind of
And see, and I look at his stuff notice. As just that he's an asshole. And it's not interesting to me.
I mean, you know, I'm not going to be I tend to be an apologist simply because I listen to a lot of comedy that I don't find particularly funny, but I do like to understand it and understand why people like it. And then there's certain comedians that make so much money that are terrible, just terrible and indefensible creatively, but people still pay money for it. So people still really, really love throwing money at Jeff Dunham. And mm-hmm. why? I don't know, because he's not a funny guy. But
I don't think he was ever funny. I not...
Yeah, but dude makes bank, man.
Well,
so...
because you make fun of because you make fun of terrorists. Great.
Yeah, with puppets.
Yeah. We have a skeleton puppet, so that gets us away with being racist because it's just a skeleton.
Right.
Great.
Exactly.
Congratulations. Yeah. You're still a racist.
Sure.
And you're laughing at him, so you're all racists.
Yeah. Now we know. But, you know, but there are also a lot of really interesting people doing sort of really interesting things. And because there's kind of a medium of the internet where you can have greater access to people who are just really off the wall. And a lot of it, you know, some of it is just really unique and really funny. And, you know, some of it isn't. It's not for everybody, but I just sort of feel like creatively there's a lot more options out there.
I think my biggest thing is that I don't have time to look for, I don't have time to sift through the bullshit, the terrible, to find the good. But the good that the mainstream is telling me is good isn't good. So I'm not going to waste my time.
What do you think the mainstream is telling you is good, just out of curiosity?
So just in terms of
Louis C.K. I mean, because
Mainstream doesn't tell me that Louis C.K. is good. The mainstream does not. If the mainstream told me that Louis C.K. was good, Louis C.K. would be on ABC, NBC, Fox, CBS.
Yeah.
If the mainstream told me it was good. But it's still relegated to late. He was relegated to late night HBO. Then he was relegated to FX. And isn't he now on FXX, which is where they threw things because we had to expand our content, and we don't care if people forget that it's out there.
Yeah, but they put the League on FXX, didn't they? And
Yeah, that's the only one I followed to FXX.
Comedy shows? Or
and I was watching a couple of them.
It's
and
good, but it's Always Sunny on it, too.
I don't know. I don't watch that one either.
It's a good show. It's a good one.
The little bits of I've seen of it just look like assholes being assholes. Mm-hmm. You know what? If I want that, that's what my gaming group's for. And you know
it
what?
It is exactly
they're
that.
Funnier. And I know them. And I can be part of that.
I mean, I doubt they're funnier, but...
But I'm part of it. I can participate along. And because I can participate along, it's better.
So basically what you're saying is the stand-up comedians that you assume to be what the mainstream would tell you are the ones that are getting shows on, say, the big four networks or...
Yeah. And they've got their shows at Branson and in Vegas. Because that's where the mainstream is going to see them. The mainstream is not going to seek out a comedy club to see a specific comedian. The mainstream will hear a comedian on their morning shock jock show.
Yeah.
And learn that this guy's coming into town on Friday. And because I laughed at three of his jokes and I don't have a better date night planned for Friday night, I'm going to go get tickets to the comedy club.
Right.
That's the way I see it.
Yeah.
And that's the way I've seen it for a long time. That's the way it was sold. That's been the way it's been sold for a long time in the mainstream.
Yeah.
Because the mainstream doesn't watch Comedy Central. The mainstream doesn't sit there and watch hours of stand-up comedy on Comedy Central to seek out a new comedian. It just doesn't, it's that's not the way it works.
Right.
It's kind of like the mainstream isn't going to troll Pandora for hours on end for the next fix of the kind of music they listen to. The mainstream's going to turn the radio on and say that's what everybody's listening to because that's what's being pumped out of my radio. And that's,
I don't know. But part of me feels like that's got to be generational.
But though. That's mainstream. That's mainstream versus alternative. And there's a reason why The Big Bang Theory has been renewed for two more years when it's really not a good show.
It's really bad. It's not.
No Two and a Half Men should have ended after its like second season.
Yes.
And what is that on, like its 12th season now or something mm-hmm. ridiculous like that?
Yeah.
The Simpsons is just regurgitating its same stuff over and over and over again.
Yeah.
Seth MacFarlane didn't even want Family Guy to keep going. But Fox basically threw a bucket of money at him and said, you're going to keep going because we're under contract.
Mm-hmm.
And we've got you because of the contract.
Hurt me, hurt me, hurt me.
It's and this is mainstream. And
yeah, but how many people are watching really network good. Television anymore? I mean, if you...
Apparently a lot of them.
Not as many people are watching Family Guy as used to watch Seinfeld, though. I mean, that's just the nature of media these days.
That's because there's more options to watch. That has nothing to do with... I mean, that's making the argument that Happy Days was a better show because it had so many more millions of views than anything on the air.
That's I'm just arguing that the landscape is different because there's so much more competition. But the fact is that the big networks kind of don't hold as much weight just simply because people have so many more options.
But the mainstream doesn't seek out those options.
I don't know that that's necessarily the case. I mean, if you want to talk about like a comedian like, say, Kevin Hart, who is not on any shows that you watch, not on any shows that I watch.
But he's in a lot of movies.
None that you're probably watching.
No, but I know
my money. Right, but my money says you didn't go see the two movies that he put out in 2013 or two or three movies that he put out in 2013. I didn't see either of them, but there's a market, very clearly a market there because obviously he sold out Madison Square Garden.
I don't tend to go see comedies in the theater.
Yeah,
because to me, that's a waste of money.
How would that be a waste of money?
Because the experience of seeing a comedy does not, almost never requires I see it on a screen larger than that one right there.
Mm.
There's almost never an
occurrence. But you don't get that like collective elation of everybody laughing at the same thing all at once.
No,
especially when you know you're going to see a movie from somebody that you can reliably say is probably going to be pretty good.
And I will see some of those, but I don't have any of that. I don't have that anymore because the people like somebody like Kevin Smith, who I would have seen, I used to see every movie put out in the theater opening weekend.
Sure.
night of, and then probably would see it twice, because I'd probably go see it like the night it came out, and then at some point, other point in the weekend, Julie and I would go see it. Mm-hmm. So I would often see them twice.
Yeah.
Now I don't care.
I don't think he makes movies anymore.
He does. He does still make movies, and they're not good because he's just still doing the same thing. And the movies that he made that were interesting, he now shits on because they didn't do well at the box office because his fan base doesn't want to see those movies. And nobody else knows who he is.
Right. But there are still funny people making funny movies. They still exist. And so, I mean, there's a certain amount of sense. And I guess I'll just take an example of, you know, regardless of how you feel about it, but going to see Anchorman in the theaters, or Anchorman 2 in the mm-hmm. theaters, which I did. And
I would have gone to see that. I just didn't get around to it. Didn't that come out around Christmas?
Yeah.
So I have no time. There's just no way I'm going to get to the theater.
Right. And so, you know, I saw it, and it was fairly crowded theater when I saw it. I mean, and I don't know. I think it's part of the experience when you go to see a movie like that, just kind of being in a room full of people that are all laughing at the same things. I just sort of feel like, to me, comedy in movie is so important. It's so vitally important that...
See, I'm also the guy that laughs at the joke that, like, one person thought of and has slipped it in. And, like, I'm the one person in the whole theater laughing.
Yeah, I do that, too.
And I like that.
Sure.
But at the same time, I don't want to stand out. You know, like, I don't... Why not? Like, I don't want to have to explain to people why I'm laughing.
Listen, few people have laughs that stand out as much as mine. And and I do that all the time.
Like, I took the kids to see Cloudy with a Chance of Meatballs 2.
Yeah.
And the thing with that movie is they had animals. They had food that looked like animals. And at one point, they don't even call it out. There is a kiwi fruit running across the screen, and it looks just like the kiwi bird.
Yeah.
And I laughed my ass off, and everybody looks at me like, what is going on over there? You know, it's like, my God, how does nobody see this and think it's hilarious? It's a kiwi. But it's a kiwi. Come on.
Yeah.
But yeah, it's stuff like that, that, it, you know, it's like, it's also like the damnation of being the biggest nerd in the genre movie. So you're the one getting really excited because you see some Easter egg and everybody else is like, and it's like, oh, did you see that? And they're like, what?
Yeah.
What was I supposed to have just seen in that image?
Right.
You know, like.
Yeah, but you don't get like a certain thrill from being the guy that noticed the thing.
I would rather be alone and get that thrill. So because I want to be able to share that with somebody, and I don't want to have to explain it. So no, I like sharing that collective experience, but I like sharing it. If I can't share it, then it's like I might as well just be alone in a room seeing this. Mm.
That seems sad somehow. I don't know why. It just,
you
know,
it's kind of nice,
but at the same time,
that the director and the writer said, oh, let's put this in just so that it's the end joke that the real true fans will get.
Right. And for that,
and they thank them for it all the time.
It's things like going to see a movie that I really want to see. Like that I know that this movie is going to be fantastic. And if it's not fantastic, I'm going to be disappointed. Mm-hmm. I want to see that movie alone. I don't want to go with anyone else. Yeah. I don't. I absolutely do not.
This movie's too cool for you and only for me.
Well,
the director made it just for me.
It's. I'm going to be disappointed if you're not as excited to see that as I am.
Yeah.
And if it's going to crash and burn that hard, I'm going to be disappointed. And I don't want to share the disappointment either. Yeah. Yeah. I just don't want to.
I told you so.
Yeah.
Interesting.
And I think that's kind of I wish he was here, because I think that I kind of get that. That's kind of the vibe that I get from Adam when I look at a movie like Watchmen.
Yeah.
He's so excited about that movie.
I was really excited about that movie too.
I was excited when it came out, and I liked it. I had a few problems with it, but I liked it.
I did too.
I generally liked it. I own the ultimate copy, you know?
Yeah.
It's like I don't go out and buy movies anymore, but I own that one.
Yeah.
And But he thinks I don't. I mean, he has accused me of not liking the movie because I don't like it.
Problems
as,
with it
because I don't like it as much.
You know
as
what?
Does.
Sean did the exact same thing to me, honestly. Because when I saw it, because I was really, we were both very, very excited about it, and then I saw it and I kind of didn't like it. I mean, there are parts about it that I'm like, I hate this part.
We also disagree. We also disagree with some of the like our assessment of exactly what's going on in it. There's some disagreement. But.
Yeah. Yeah. So, I mean, there was, so he kind of, you know, he got a little upset with me just because it was one of those, well, but you're supposed to love this movie. And it's like, well, they should have made it better.
Yeah.
If they wanted me to love it, they should have made it better.
And that's kind of how I feel about Scott Pilgrim. And everybody tells me I should love it.
Well, that one is, that one you're wrong about. I mean, I'll just come out and say you're wrong.
You know what? I'm also willing to admit that it's a generational thing. I think there are certain movies that
it could be, yeah.
That at certain periods of your life work better than at other periods.
Yeah.
His abject hatred of Lost in Translation, I can understand from somebody
never went through it.
Much younger.
Yeah.
And I'm not there yet. I'm not to that point, but I'm toeing the line, and I can understand like the feelings of everyone in that movie. I kind of get you know what he's going through. I'm not there. I'm not, you know, I'm not that guy, but I can understand it. I can see that guy, you know.
Yeah.
I know people that are there. And I just don't think he has that same connection.
Yeah.
That, and he doesn't like Bill Murray, which is weird.
Weird. How does that even happen in this day and age?
Yeah, I don't know.
No, it's scandalous.
It's a damn disgrace. It's terrible. All
right. So we are way far away from American Hustle.
Ah, fuck
it. So we better wrap it up here.
Yeah. So any last things to say about American Hustle? Who is American Hustle for?
Boy, it's really hard to place.
Who's it for?
That's really hard to place.
So this is a question. This is a question we used to ask. And what's funny is Backseat Book Club, Scott, Lena, and them, they actually still do ask this question every episode because they only do it once a month. But and they ask, who is this book for? And so I'm like, who is this movie for?
I tend to look at movies like this movie is I would argue this movie is for my parents. It seems like the kind of like. Kind of savvy about how movies work and about how characters work, and but also fans of big character movies.
I kind of have a hard time placing this thing too. I mean, being a movie geek, it's fun to watch just for the technical aspects of it, but in fact it's a good story. I'd say people who like like sort of a history based drama.
I almost see this as if somebody thinks they're gonna like if my grandmother said, I want to watch that Wolf of Wall Street movie because it was nominated for an Oscar.
Yeah.
I would say, no, watch this one instead.
I've actively told people not to watch that movie for that very reason,
Because she would be incredibly offended by the language. She'd be
unless you gave them a bunch of warnings, like, this is a very rough and raw movie. If you're easily offended, you're not going
to
like it.
And I'm gonna use my grandmother's specific example. She loves going to the movies. She sees movies constantly. She's 83 years old. She's awesome. You know, like, the other day, she was going to... I invite her to come to all the Holden soccer games. And the other day, she didn't come to the soccer game because the kid who mows her lawn wasn't going to be able to come on Saturday. He was going to come on Sunday, but it was supposed to rain on Sunday. So she mowed her lawn.
Yeah.
She's awesome.
Sure.
She loves movies. And she'll step outside of her comfort zone of language and violence for certain actors.
Yes.
For certain things. Like she for whatever reason, I think she's got a thing for John Travolta. Like she really likes John Travolta.
Wow.
Which you know.
Huh.
He's done some pretty rough stuff too.
And I think she's seen pretty much most of his movies.
Including Pulp Fiction?
I think she might have tried, but I think she might have seen that like a TV cut of that. I don't think she's seen.
It's pretty tamed down.
Yeah. Like and she'll do that. She'll knowingly do that. If she knows that a movie's gonna be too rough, she just won't see it. Or she'll ask about it. And I think if she thought about seeing Wolf of Wall Street, I would point her to this one, just because it's
a little less gratuitous.
Yes. Yeah, absolutely. I mean, there is a little bit of violence. There's rough language, but
well, not to the extent yet. Nowhere near.
I mean,
where it's up on every
Wolf season. Of Wall Street. Wolf of Wall Street is
goes for shock value.
Yeah, because nobody whips like their dick out mm-hmm. in American Hustle,
right?
And that's makes right. it a little more accessible.
It's a lot more accessible.
Yeah. Wolf of Wall Street is about excesses.
Yeah,
this is not about excess. It's about survival.
Right.
Which
right.
probably is a much more accessible story.
Yeah. I think it's a lot more accessible. I think it's a lot more comfortable. I think people can...
Well, let's put it this way.
Yeah. It's not as thrilling,
more,
though.
It's a lot more polite company kind of movie.
Right.
The two characters are more closer to mainstream America. I mean, people can identify
yeah.
with them.
Yeah.
Because they seem like them. Whereas Wolf of Wall Street is a world we'll never... We can only read about... In the newspaper.
Well, I mean, then again, so is something
after
like...
After it's happened, this is something like, these people can be my next door neighbors.
Right. Well, I mean, so is something like The Sopranos. Mm-hmm. You know, it's you're getting a glimpse into a world you'll never know. Mm-hmm. And you can only assume that the story they're telling you is accurate.
Yeah.
But you're just along for the ride. Mm-hmm. Whatever ride you're going to go on, that's the ride you're on.
Right.
I think you can have more investment in the characters in American Hustle. Like, it's, you don't feel like you need like an acid bath after watching American yeah, Hustle in quite the same way. In quite the same way that Wolf of Wall Street, I kind of felt like I needed a penicillin shot after seeing that movie.
Sure.
I just felt like I caught something mm-hmm. just for enjoying it as much as I did.
Right.
This one, it's like, yeah, it's just a lot more tame.
Right.
Well, I'll say no switch tape, but it is a much more accessible.
It's, oh, yeah. Yeah, yeah.
It's, again, it's something I can, middle American can relate to. You know, those could be my neighbors.
Yep.
I mean,
yep.
I could work for this guy.
Yeah.
You may think of the people in, you know, his dry cleaning business. They never suspected he was doing this.
Right.
I would have never right. thought this nebbish, this loser, this small-time operator could ever pull off something this big. Neither could he.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Yeah. I think that's what made him so interesting, was that he kind of flew in under the radar.
I'm a little man in a big world.
Yeah, yeah.
But I know I'm a little man in a big world.
Right, right. All right, that's all I've got. Mm-hmm. Anybody else? Good?
Nope.
Good. All right, next week.
Captain America!
See ya.